This program is designed to provide general information with regards to the subject matters covered. This information is given with the understanding that neither the hosts, guests, sponsors, or station are engaged in rendering any specific and personal, medical, financial, legal, counseling, professional service, or any advice. You should seek the services of competent professionals before applying or trying any suggested ideas.
Good day, beautiful, bountiful, beloved, immortal beings, and good-looking people. And remember, you're good-looking because you're always looking for and finding the good. And you have found good in abundance by consciously and conscientiously tuning into The Joy of Living, hosted by your humble host, Barry Shore, B-A-R-R-Y-S-H-O-R-E, Barry Shore, here in Venice Beach, California, overlooking the vast Pacific Ocean. And you have tuned into this show consciously and conscientiously because you care most about you. Y-O-U-E-W-E. And that's great, because when you care the most about you, you want to be the best you possible. And when you're the best you possible, you can create the kind of world we all want to live in, because you'll be able to build bridges of harmony and peace and happiness and joy and love. So we welcome you to this show hosted by K4HD.com. You can put notes up on the board to send us and comments. And you are joined with 270,913 people listening around the world on this magical, mystical, mythical platform called Internet Radio. And we're glad that you're here. Now, in this particular program, as you know, because there are at least 240,000 people that tune in every week, we work with the three fundamentals of life. And those three fundamentals are, number one, life. Your life has purpose. That's right. Every human life has a purpose. And the corollary to that, the result is that when life has purpose, you can go mad. Now, in this case, MAD is a great acronym that stands for Go Make a Difference. And when you can make a difference in life, how do you do that? By uncovering and unlocking the secrets of everyday words and terms. That's right. Simple example. WWW. Ask anybody what does it stand for, and they'll tell you, well, something to do with the internet. And factually speaking, they're correct. But in our world, the world of the positive, purposeful, powerful, and pleasant, WWW stands for, drumroll, fanfare, da-da-da-da. What a wonderful world. And what a, is a word, W-H-A-T-A. What a wonderful world. And that song, tip of the hat to Satchmo, Louis Armstrong, for enabling it to go worldwide and touch hundreds of millions, if not billions of people around the planet, has caused goodness to be channeled into the world. And that's a cog. Cog stands for channel of goodness. Because when you hear that word, that song, even the opening bars right away, what do? You smile. And SMILE is a great acronym that if you can internalize it, utilize and leverage it, it will literally help you become the best you possible. Because SMILE is an acronym that stands for seeing miracles in life every day, every day. Now, invariably, right now, I have on the board probably 12, 13, 14 questions, almost all the same. And whether I'm speaking to 50 people or 5,000, invariably people ask me, Mr. Shore, I've been up for hours already. I haven't seen any miracles. And I ask them, are you here? Can you hear? Can you see? You have water to drink, you have food to eat, you have a place to sleep, you have family, you have friends. Those are all miraculous events in this world. And think about it. Millions of people did not get out of bed this morning. A million plus people didn't get out of bed because they died. And in today's pandemic world, millions of people didn't get out of bed because they can't. They're infirm. Now, your humble host, Barry Shore, most of you people know that. We have 240,000 people every show, and another 40,000 come because a friend says, you got to listen to The Joy of Living with Barry Shore. Most of you know the story. Those who don't, I was standing up in the morning, just like I hope 99.99% of everybody listening, and 15 and a half years ago on September 17, 2004, standing up in the morning, hale and hearty, able to leap tall buildings in a single bound, faster than a speeding bullet. And that evening, I was in the hospital, paralyzed, my neck down. I became a quadriplegic in a matter of moments. And it was not from an automobile accident or a spinal injury. It was a rare disease called French polio, Guillain-Barré syndrome for the cognoscenti. But the point is that I couldn't move. I was rendered completely paralyzed. And yet you hear my voice, positive, powerful, purposeful, and pleasant, because I've learned how to see miracles in life every day. Now, I have to tell you, 2 weeks ago, my 8-year-old niece comes over to me and asks me, Uncle Barry, can we spell miracle? Can we spell smile S-M-I-E-L? And I thought about it. I said, why not? Smile. Okay. I asked her why. She says, because then it will stand for seeing miracles in everyday life. Out of the mouth of babes, seeing miracles in everyday life. Because when you do that, you begin to create the kind of world we all want to live in with neuro-linguistic programming. We all have huge heads with big brains, 50 billion brain cells and a trillion synapses moving and connecting them. And it's all more than just to decide what kind of latte you want this morning. So when you can use your neuro-linguistic program to create the kind of world we all want to live in, a world filled with joy, happiness, peace, and love, then you're going to have a better situation in life. And the genius of that is that CREATE is a wonderful acronym that stands for Causing Rethinking, Enabling All to Excel. And that's what you're going to be doing. You're going to be rethinking and learning how to excel when you hear from our guest today, because this is one of the most wonderful human beings, that two-legged human beings that is walking the planet right now. And he is a contributor in a good way. I am an avid fan, almost a groupie of his. And I'm so appreciative of the fact that he has made the time to join with us today. And we'll be speaking with him in just a few moments. But I just want to say the word create, to cause rethinking, enabling all to excel. When you can learn how to say the following two words and incorporate them in your life regularly, consciously and conscientiously, at least three times a day for the rest of your life, you will be creating the kind of world we all want to live in. And that those two words are, drumroll, fanfare, da-da-da-da. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Because THANK is a wonderful acronym that stands for to harmonize and network kindness. To harmonize and network kindness. The Dalai Lama has been quoted as saying, and I've read in his writings, be kind whenever possible. And it's always possible. Kind is a wonderful acronym that stands for keep inspiring noble deeds. Now, I do have to warn you in advance that your humble host, Barry Shore, at barryshore.com. And if you ever missed, by the way, a moment of this show, you don't want to do that, and you want to listen again, you certainly want to do that, and you want to share this with at least five people, and you most definitely want to do that. Go to barryshore.com, B-A-R-R-Y-S-H-O-R-E. All the information about our guest and his books and all the things that he does and YouTubes and see, you can find it all there. You don't have to write anything down. Just listen and absorb and let it flow over you, because it's so enlivening. But I have to tell you in advance that your humble host does use four-letter words, and I even use the four-letter F-U word. And I do it for shock value, and I do it because it's fun. But there it is right away. Fun. Capital F-U, capital N, capital N. Fun. Now, of course, I have comments up on the board. Barry Shore, fun is spelled with three letters, but not in our world. Remember, we're the world of positive, purposeful, powerful, and pleasant. And our world is spelled F-U, capital N, capital N. So after the show, when you see your family, your friends, you have a big smile on your face. Remember what that stands for. You point your finger, say, F-U, everybody. Remember right away to add capital N, capital N. Now, I told you I do use four-letter words on this show. And the four-letter words that we use are give, live, life, hope, grow, free, feet, head. And with head and feet, I'm going to ask our amazing, wonderful guest, Dr. Daniel Lieberman, to say a huge hello to 270,913 people around the world. Dr. Lieberman, please.
Hi, thanks for having me on your show.
Thank you. I don't think you've had many introductions like that before, have you?
No, definitely not.
When was the last time anybody ever said to you, Dr. Lieberman, who is the chair, by the way, in the Department of Human Evolutionary Biology at Harvard University, and even though we have a worldwide audience, everybody in the world knows of Harvard University. When was the last time anybody ever said F you to you with a big smile on their face and got away with it?
Oh, all the time, really.
Oh. But that's why I've asked them to be on, because, as I said, I am really a groupie of this amazing man who is dedicated his life to the pursuit of what I would call us, you, Y-O-U. Again, the reason you tune into the joy of living, because you care about you. Dr. Lieberman studies how and why the human body is the way it is. His research combines paleontology, anatomy, physiology, and experimental biomechanics in the lab and in the field. And here's where it gets really fun. Again, one of his books that I love a lot and I keep thumb through occasionally, Evolution of the Human Head, which we'll talk about. But the one that I just read for the fourth time just a couple months ago, The Story of the Human Body, and about feet, because Dr. Lieberman takes feet very seriously. He writes about the evolution of running. His research on running in general, especially barefoot running, he's now known as the barefoot professor because he's an avid marathon runner and he runs barefoot. So without any more ado from Barry Shore, we want to hear from Dr. Lieberman. And let's just jump right in with both feet, pun included, purposeful. And let's use two words right now, a Latin word and a Greek word. And let's talk about, because we need to, the pandemic right now. And then we'll get more deeply into your research and such. The virus that is affecting the world, and the kind of hubris that the world had prior to the virus, almost, and I think I'm speaking almost myself, thinking that, well, this couldn't happen to us in the 21st century. Would you be kind enough, Dr. Lieberman, to speak about that from your perspective?
Well, I think you're quite right. For the last few decades, we've been living kind of on borrowed time. In a period when we really haven't confronted many serious epidemics, and there have been some, but the seeds for this have been around for a long time, and anybody who's been paying attention has known that we've just been waiting for the next
shoe to drop, as it were. Oh. Did we lose Dr. Lieberman? Hello, Dr. Lieberman. We can't hear you. This is live radio. I wonder if you can hear me. Did we lose him, Rebel?
Yes, we did, and I'm going to get him right back.
Thank you. Okay, in the interim, I'm going to just make mention of some more of the wonderful, amazing accomplishments of Dr. Lieberman and what he does, because it's really important to understand that his thesis about our human body and our species is that we have come to the point in the evolution of the human condition, the human body, that we have what's called mismatch diseases. And these are caused by the lack of congruence between genes and environment. So I think we have, there you are, back. Hi. Dr. Lieberman, you're right, you're back with us?
Yeah, I don't know what happened. The phone just cut out. Sorry about that.
Okay, look, it can happen even in the 21st century when we take things for granted, like speaking around the world. So I was just giving a little bit of background to the ideas that you've been proposing about mismatched diseases and such like that. But let's stay right where we were when we just lost you, where you said you're quite right. We've been living on borrowed time. I think it was Bill Gates, who used to be the richest man in the world, actually several years ago started mentioning that we're sort of, in quotation marks, due for some sort of endemic pandemic, and yet woefully unprepared.
Well, yeah, I think we definitely are unprepared because we've not been listening to the science. This is not something unpredictable. For millions of years, viruses and humans have been in a kind of arms race, an evolutionary arms race. And what happened is that starting around 12,000 years ago, when we ceased becoming hunter-gatherers and started living in villages and then towns and then cities, we started creating the perfect conditions for for very contagious viruses to spread, because what viruses like are lots of people closely packed together who can then transmit them from one host to another. And, you know, when you're hunter-gatherer, you know, one of the facts I love to tell people is that, you know, hunter-gatherers live at such low population densities. If it was a really dense bunch of hunter-gatherers in the island of Manhattan, there'd be only 87 people living on the island of Manhattan. That's probably an overestimate, right? So,
oh my gosh.
Now we've got millions of people, right, in Manhattan. And so once we have lots of people at high population densities, that's perfect for epidemics. And then the other problem is that we live in many parts of the world, we live in close contact with animals, right? We have farm animals, but we also have vermin. And in this particular case, the virus came from bats and jumped into humans. And because humans aren't, you know, had no natural defenses against this virus because we never encountered it before, it has a perfect host. And so hunter-gatherers do get sick. They don't live perfect lives and with you know, perfect health. But they don't experience the kind of epidemics that we have been experiencing ever since the origins of agriculture. And then with the rise of cities and our global world and everybody getting on airplanes going here and there and all that, that just increases the chances for this. So you know, this is sadly part of you know, the price for modern life.
But that in itself is really fascinating, especially you who study us. I mean, you're a scientist in the sense that you love the human condition. You love the human race. And I say race with a double entendre, because you like to race, meaning move your feet and exercise and such. And you love who we are. We are the human race. We have a large head. We have specialized feet. And we're sort of conditioned to be able to work and live under almost any condition. If you look at people living around the world and some of the most isolated situations, whether it be extreme hot or extreme cold, or as you said, extreme density, and yet still the human kind always emerges stronger than any kind of virus. Obviously, it would be like a culling effect, but we're capable, I believe, of not only understanding and grappling with it, but subduing it. Is that not correct?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, humans are an incredibly adaptable species, and because of our proclivities for culture and cooperation and working together, you know, we can and will beat this virus. Just think about what we've been doing. We're social distancing and washing our hands and you know, donating face masks. And, you know, I think you can see sometimes the virus and these sorts of disasters bring out the worst in people. But very often, I think they remind us of what is special about being a human being. And that's we're the most cooperative, pro-social species. We help each other regardless of whether related to each other. And you know, with medical science and cooperation and public awareness, you know, we can and will beat this virus, but it's going to require, it's a collective effort. I mean, I think if you ever want evidence that we're all in this together and each our, you know, everybody's health affects everybody else's health, right? It's a collective communal responsibility. This epidemic mm-hmm. is proof positive.
So let's use that, and we want to use the most positive terms possible without being Pollyannish. But let's say, for want of a better term at the moment, a silver lining to this pandemic, which again, through the almost the magic, you would say, of social media being able to touch people within moments globally, and yet recognizing and bringing to the fore the fact that you just said, we can collectively and communally work in tandem, knowing that I am my brother's keeper. What an amazing mm-hmm. throwback. I mean, here you are, you're at Harvard University and your office is on Divinity Avenue. and you straddled, for want of a better term, I'd say you straddle both worlds of, for want of a better term, the pure science and, again, using another term, pure religion in the sense of not mystical, but collegial in the sense of people working and wanting to be together. That's a beautiful kind of, a vision. So, and this vermin, this disease is prodding us towards that more and more.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, you know, reminds us that, you know, we're all fundamentally, we need to be humanists. We need to care about each other. And and no man is an island, as we say, right? And you know, and I think that's true for many other aspects of health. We can't, and we don't, and we haven't for millions of years gone alone. We require our survival for millions of years has required us to help each other, and so we've been selected for millions of years to be cooperative and pro-social and communal in ways that no other species is, and that's I think why we're such a special species. Of course, we also have, there's a dark side to human nature as well, but let's focus on the positive side.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. I want to go deeper into the idea of head and feet because those are specialties of yours. But prior to that, let's just speak about something that is part of the human condition and I think is coming to the fore more and more because of the pandemic, and that is stress. And again, oh, in your, yeah, and if you just speak about just for a few minutes, you know, let's be blunt, stress in and of itself is, it's neutral. There is actually good stress. Most of the time it's negative. It's not released in a positive way. And that whole idea of cortisol and such. But if you'd be kind enough to speak to us about stress in the modern sense and what's happening to us because of it.
Sure. So stress is, you know, so we have to distinguish between two kinds of stress. So one kind of stress is psychosocial stress, you know, when you get upset about something, right? You read the news, you see the pictures on the news of people in hospitals, you see, you know, war scenes, or a lawyer calls you something, right? And you get psychosocial stress, right? Mm-hmm. But the response to that is physical, right? And that what that does is it activates what we call the fight and flight response, right? That you elevate hormones like cortisol and epinephrine, those activate you, and they get you ready to run away from the lion or away from that dangerous situation. And in short bursts, that's adaptive, right? If a lion were to chase you, or the building were to catch on fire, that stress would help you get out of the building and survive. The problem is that today we live in environments which have enormous amounts of chronic stress. You know, we commute in horrible traffic jams. We have, you know, jobs that we might not like. We read the news. I just have to turn on the television or whatever. All of that can elevate stress and keep you stressed for long periods of time. And that is pernicious, especially in contexts like now, because cortisol has a positive side; it can save your life, but as a negative side, it also has all kinds of bad effects. And one of the worst effects of cortisol is that it, you know, its job is to get energy, make energy available for you to deal with that emergency. And the way it does that is it turns off the energy you use for other functions. And one of the most important functions is your immune system. So when people are stressed, their immune function goes down, and you're more vulnerable and you're more susceptible to getting diseases. And so one of my concerns about this pandemic is that people are getting stressed about it, which is natural and it's normal. There's nothing wrong with that. But that stress then works against us. And so we all need now, as part of our collective defense mechanism and as our individual defense mechanism, is to work on controlling that stress, you know, through meditation, through, you know, listening to your podcast, through whatever it takes, right? Although, you know, in healthy ways, obviously, you know, drinking too much alcohol or whatever is not a healthy way of dealing with it. But we need to find ways to mitigate that stress, because that can actually help save people's lives. It can help you be healthier and help you fight that disease and help each other fight that disease. So we should also be trying not to stress each other. So people are out there trying to, you know, scare the bejesus out of each other are not acting for the public good.
Right. This is as a plug for my upcoming book, is titled 4 words: stress kills, joy heals. You like that?
Yeah, it's true. Stress is pernicious.
Oh, yes, it's absolutely, and from my humble opinion, again, I'm not you. It's, to me, it's the hub of the wheel that from it emanates these things that people talk, like you, that you write about very often in your books, and which I truly appreciate you for. High blood pressure, heart diseases, obesity, anxiety, skin ailments. I mean, diabetes. We'll talk about type 2 diabetes in just a bit. Depression, insomnia, headaches, gastrointestinal problems all tend to stem from or be exacerbated by stress. So, yes, it goes hand in glove, unfortunately, with the pandemic. That's why when I was speaking before, before you came on and said hello, we were talking about the Dalai Lama and the ability to say thank you. And the ability for someone to internalize that consciously and conscientiously, I'm going to be saying thank you at least 3 times a day, not in the perfunctory way. So I'll give you an example, if I may. As we said, thanks stands for to harmonize and network kindness. So I learned this from a devotee of the Dalai Lama. And I use my examples, but he taught something very similar. If you're going to your coffee shop and you order your fancy latte for $5.25 and you sit there and they bring it to you, say thank you, of course, right? And you wait, if you go in a coffee shop and you order your latte and you sit a couple minutes, nobody brings it to you, go to the counter and they say, oh, I'm sorry, we forgot. And they bring it to you a few minutes later, you still, nice smile, thank you. And if you're walking out of the coffee shop and it's raining and someone holds the door open for you, thank you. If you're walking out of the coffee shop, somebody slams the door on you, thank you. If you're in traffic, as you said, and you're late for an appointment, somebody cuts you off, you say, thank you. If you get up in the middle of the night and you stub your toe and it hurts, you say, thank you. When we learn to coordinate our thoughts and our words and our deeds in this positive, purposeful, powerful way, then we bring joy into our lives and it mitigates and sometimes even eliminates, certainly reduces the stress that you just mentioned in those two aspects of psychosocial and the chronic. So thank you for that. Let's talk about feet, if we may. Are you ready, sir?
Hi, I'm used to talking about feet.
Okay. I happen to love feet because, as you heard, and I don't know if you knew this about me before, that I was a quadriplegic. I'm much better now. I am still somewhat what people call disabled in the sense that I can't even sit up from a chair by myself unless I have arms on it. And I am vertical and ambulatory these days, albeit with the help of a 6.5-foot walking wand made for me by a Zen master. So I'm a triped. I'm not like you. I'm not a biped. I'm a triped, and no, I can no longer run because I can't even stand. By the way, Dr. Lieberman, I can't even stand on my own 2 feet. I fall over because I don't have any dorsal plantar flexion and things like that. I have no more power in those feet. So I remember, though, thank God, I was able to run for 50-plus years of my life. But no longer. I'm just happy I can walk and be vertical and ambulatory. So let's talk about the magic of feet.
Well, you've just given such a wonderful introduction. How do you want to start? But I want to make one correction. You said that I run marathons barefoot, and that's not true. I've never run a marathon barefoot. I do enjoy running barefoot occasionally, but
you run barefoot, but not a marathon barefoot. Good, thank you.
Yeah, I've never run that. I don't want anybody to think I'm like, you know, I enjoy running barefoot occasionally, but it's not, most of the time I wear shoes, but but I do think that I will say this, though, if you want to see people smile and enjoy themselves, just get them to take their shoes off sometimes. It's amazing how unconnected people are with their bodies and with the world around them. And, you know, until recently, everybody was barefoot all the time. And you get the sole of the foot is actually loaded with sensory nerves. You get enormous amount of information about the world from your feet. In fact, it's normally the only part of your body that's in contact with the ground. And walking barefoot and even running barefoot is a wonderful, pleasurable experience. And people often, they're very afraid to take their shoes off. And then once they do it, they realize you just see the smiles on their face. And so I think it's actually a great form of therapy.
This is so, for me personally, because part of my therapy and actually being able to be vertical and ambulatory is, in addition to having great physical and occupational therapists, since I live here in Venice Beach, I am literally by the water's edge. We're not even a mile from the beach. So while I was literally quadriplegic, I had envisioned myself being able to walk again on sand. And I chose sand in my visualization because when you walk on sand, even if you fall, it doesn't hurt like it does on concrete. And yeah. Falling, by the way, is a terrible thing for anybody, but especially people who, in my situations, or people elderly, because obviously, as you know better than almost anybody, you can fracture and break valuable bones in the body, like the hip and the femur and things like that. And yeah. So the ability to walk in sand gave me that feeling of hope again. So when I got to the beach with my physical therapist, who graciously agreed to work with me, she said, you're crazy, but I'm going to do it anyway. And we spent sometimes 2 hours per day, three times a week at the beach, just putting my feet in the sand. I wasn't even able to walk a step. And it took many, many months before I did. But when we did, and again, with her help and leaning on her and walking with a walking stick, to be able to walk and not have the fear of falling, that was wonderful. I also want to bring in something very religious at the moment. Are you ready?
Sure.
Okay. So in the Bible, in the first five books, when God and Moses first interact with each other, it's an amazing scene. Most everybody who's ever read the Bible, heard about it, knows this particular scene where Moses sees a bush that's burning and not consumed. So he turns aside to look at this miraculous event. And from this burning bush emanates a voice. And the voice, I'm not going to do God's voice. Only Bill Cosby could do that so well. But I'm not going to do the voice. But the point was that you read the Bible, and the first words that God says to Moses are, take off your shoes.
That's right.
And one of the reasons that it's said in the commentaries is God wanted Moses to be completely connected with the earth and therefore all the things that come from the earth, including the human. In other words, I want you so rooted in this environment I call life. I want you to remove your shoes because that's a barrier. We don't want barriers. We want to be fully connected. And a play on word of you, like you said, the soul of the foot. So soul could be spelled S-O-L-E or S-O-U-L. And like you said, there are so many all the nerve endings are in the feet. When I had lots of acupuncture done for me to try and restore or feel if I had any sense in my feet, which I can't move at all or wiggle my toes or anything. But I've always associated soul, S-O-L-E, with soul, S-O-U-L, because that's who we are. When we stand on earth, and especially in the sand, or what I like to do, in the water, I don't walk on the water anymore, it causes too many problems for people. But in the water, which I do a lot, by the way, I learned how to swim, the feeling of being able to be connected is really what, like you said, smile. I have two grandkids. One is 3 years old, one's only 3 months. And just seeing them move around on the sand, right away they light up. So it's true, whether you're 3 months old.
Yes. But the thing is that humans, we often talk about, going barefoot on sand or on grass. But the thing is that until recently, people went barefoot everywhere. The parts of Kenya where I work, people don't wear shoes and they think nothing of running around on rocks and, craggy sort of landscapes. We normally have calluses on our feet. We can protect our feet. We're kind of very, it's wonderful to walk on sand. It's wonderful to walk on a lawn, but we can be connected and use our bodies in all kinds of ways that we've kind of forgotten about in our modern world. And I hope that people, we have a kind of a fear of our bodies sometimes.
Ooh, this is a wonderful point that I want to just do a quick break to a sponsor, because fear of the body, like I was talking about fear of falling, you're right. I think we do. I want everybody to stay in the edge of your seat. I know some people have already fallen off, Dr. Lieberman. We're going to come right back after this brief message, be right back with amazing Dr. Daniel Lieberman, and we'll be talking about fear of your body, how to overcome it, and soar into life. Be right back after this message. Oh, hello, everybody. Guess what? Stress kills. That's right. Everybody knows it. Stress, S-T-R-E-S-S, stress kills. But what do you do about it? Joy heals. J-O-Y heals. Joy makes you feel better. It allows you to reduce, mitigate, maybe even eliminate stress. And how do you do that? The best way you can is go to barryshore.com. B-A-R-R-Y-S-H-O-R-E. barryshore.com. Take the free stress test. Find out what color is your stress and then learn how to reduce, mitigate, even eliminate it with the 11 strategies for living in joy daily. It's free, absolutely free. Go to barryshore.com. Do it now. Good day, beautiful, bountiful, beloved, immortal beings, and good-looking people. Remember, you're good-looking because you're always looking for and finding the good. And we have good in abundance with our guest, Dr. Daniel Lieberman. He's the chair of the Department of Human Evolutionary Biology at Harvard University. Thank you, Dr. Lieberman. We were just talking about feet and taking your shoes off and feeling the earth, whether you're climbing on rocks or on the ground or just the earth, on a grass or in sand. And you said about people having fear of our own bodies. What I'd like to do now is just spend a couple of minutes and talk to us about sort of the difference, as I remember reading and watching your YouTubes and such, of the difference between walking on the heel of your foot or the ball of your foot.
So all of us, when we walk, we land on our heel. It's called a heel strike or a rear foot strike if you're a biomechanist. But so that's normal when you walk. And it turns out that when you run, most of us, when we wear shoes, we land also on the heel of our foot. But if you were to go barefoot, you take your shoes off and run down the street, and run not on a beach, but on a sort of a more normal surface that people run on, for like a trail, for example, or a road, you'd find that it hurts really hard. Every time you hit the ground, you'd have a big, you know, collision with the ground that would really hurt. So what people do when they're barefoot almost all the time is, instead of landing on their heel, they land on the ball of the foot and then let the heel down. And that's called a forefoot strike or a midfoot strike, depending upon how you do it. And so we published a paper about 10 years ago in the journal Nature showing that this is how barefoot people run, but we also showed the biomechanics and showed that when you run that way, you end up running basically light as a feather. And the reason people do that is that you change the physics of the interaction between your body and the ground so that it's essentially impact free. So you don't have that spike of force that kind of shoots up your body. And so I think that's actually the way that humans evolved to run, and that there are a lot of benefits to running that way. Although if you do decide to switch how you run, you have to do it carefully and slowly and gradually. And, you know, it's not necessary for everybody, especially if you don't have strong calf muscles and all that sort of stuff. But you know, we can learn a lot about our bodies and how our bodies work by studying people who's, you know, because we have to, one of the things you have to realize is that the world that we live in today is very weird. So you like acronyms, right? So for weird, yes. Us in evolutionary biology, weird stands for Western, educated, industrial, rich, and democratic. And we think it's normal, right, to be weird, but actually we're only about 10% of the world. And then till recently, nobody was weird, right? Everybody was you know, barefoot, and nobody was westernized, and nobody was in democracies, and nobody had money, and, you know, they were all hunter-gatherers, right? So and so our bodies, the way we use them in all kinds of different ways, are very strange. And that's nothing wrong with it, and there's nothing bad about it. But we can learn a lot about how our bodies function and how our bodies work by studying the past and by studying people who live very differently from us.
So let's talk about several things all at once, because I'm such a fan of what you write, and I'm an advantage to everybody listening. But again, if you go to barryshore.com, BarryShore.com, all the things about reaching Dr. Lieberman, seeing his videos and reading his books will be there. But you just mentioned something that just made me perk up and say, wait a minute, only 10 years ago we started realizing some of these things. And here you are, you live in Cambridge. I grew up in Brookline, Massachusetts, just on the other side of the river from you. And throughout the time I was knee-high to a grasshopper until I left Massachusetts willingly to come to California, one of the great events of the year was always watching people run the marathon. And here you had an event that spans over 100 years, runners from all over the world. And in the past, I think, 20 plus years only, you had most of the time the people who were winning those races were people who had been running all their lives, and probably more often than not, barefoot in higher altitudes in Eastern Africa, where I know you go regularly to Kenya and such. And so are you making reference to people who live in those environments who have helped you see another way of understanding the human body and how we interact and how we can actually become the best possible beings?
That's exactly right. So my students and I go regularly to places like Kenya. We also go to Mexico and other parts of the world where we study people who are pre-industrial, who don't live. You know, we look at subsistence farmers. We've also gone and looked at hunter-gatherers. We look at people who live very different kinds of lives from us today. We look at, you know, people who never wear shoes and people who don't sit in chairs and people don't sleep on soft mattresses. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with shoes or chairs or soft mattresses. I use all three of those things. But it's a way for us to help learn about how the human body functions and what are the trade-offs? Because one of the things that we often think about is we think that everything that we in the modern world is great, right? But everything, as an evolutionary biologist, you know, one thing I've learned over the years is that everything has a trade-off. You know, every time you do something, you don't do something else. Every time you spend a minute doing this, you don't spend that minute doing that. Every time you spend a dollar on this, you don't spend a dollar on that. And trade-offs are part of biology. And so shoes, for example, are a trade-off, right? Shoes they can look nice and they can be beautiful and they can protect your feet, but they also remove sensory information from our bodies. Chairs are comfortable. We sit in them. I'm actually not sitting in a chair right now, but I could if I wanted to. But chairs are comfortable and they save us energy, but they also cause us to be, you know, sedentary, which has its own problems. So everything has trade-offs, and by studying people who live the way we used to, we can study how our bodies are adapted for, and then also understand the trade-offs that come with those original adaptations and how our lives have changed.
So a personal question. When you and your students go to Kenya, as an example, and you are interacting with people who most of the time today are in the industrial age. One cannot live in the world and not be touched by an industrial age, even though maybe rudimentary compared to most of what we have, let's say, in the cities of the West. But are you now yourself staying more on, let's say, less soft mattresses and sitting on the floor more and things like that?
Well, I'm not sure if we've changed. Well, I like a good firm mattress. I try not to sit too much. And I certainly have gotten interested in wearing minimal shoes and going barefoot a lot. So, yeah, I've changed my life as a result of what I've learned from studying people in different parts of the world. I mean, I now my favorite running shoes are actually inspired by Native American runners. I love to wear the kind of sandals that they wear called huaraches. That's a Spanish word for sandal, but they're these wonderful running sandals that are just fantastic for running in. So yes, you can learn a lot from studying different cultures and looking at how people live their lives. And you can also learn a lot about just about about human nature. I mean, a lot of, until recently, people really had to depend on each other in all kinds of extraordinary ways. And one of the things I've really come to appreciate about many of the places that I've worked is just how people just unselfishly work at the community level to help each other. By sharing food and sharing tasks and working together. There's a lot to learn from studying people in different cultures.
And I have to say, on a very personal level, this is one of the, I'd say the second, maybe even the most important that I've learned from your books and your work and studying you, is that the ability to open eyes, minds, and hearts to other humans in other places throughout the world, and recognize that we are here to share and to be together and therefore grow with one another, again, in other communities, oftentimes in small religious communities. You see a lot of this happening where people depend much more upon each other and tend to watch and listen to, how should we call it, the innate wisdom of other people who have been there before. It's another issue that in the Western industrialized world, oftentimes we overlook. We disparage sometimes the genius of age in favor of youth. And yet in other cultures, it's more, how should we say it, open to learning. Would you say that's true?
Well, yeah. I mean, one of the things that's interesting about human beings is that we're one of the few species, one of the only species, extremely rare, in which humans, in which we live, we're selected, and it's normal to live after the age of reproduction. So most species, once you've finished reproducing, natural selection doesn't care about you. That's it, right? You're gone. And humans, even if you look in, hunter-gatherer societies where they have no medicine people live into the modal age of hunter-gatherers the age at which they pass away is like 68 to 78. Most people live about 7 decades. And of course, so many of those decades are spent as grandparents. And all cultures value grandparents, not only because of the wisdom that grandparents have elders have that pass on to younger generations. So that's an important advantage in human beings, but also because in all these cultures, grandparents play a very active role in helping their children and their grandchildren. If you're a grandparent and as a hunter-gatherer or a farmer, you're still out there working in your 60s and your 70s and your 80s, helping feed your children and your grandchildren. And that's something that makes humans utterly different from any other species, is that we evolved not just to be parents, but also to be grandparents, and think about what grandparents do.
This is so enlightening, so wonderful. But we have so many questions up on the board and we can't even get to them. On a personal level, Dr. Lieberman, are you a grandparent yet?
No, not yet. No, my daughter's only 22.
Okay, well, could be happening soon. One never knows. But put it this way, I think you're a grandparent at the moment, and hopefully we'll put those two things together. So what I'd like to do in just a couple of minutes remaining, a 60-second question to you, dear sir. And again, huge thank you for being here and sharing with us. What at the moment is your most fervent desire?
Oh, my gosh, my most fervent desire? Is short term or long term? Let me do long term. My biggest interest right now is to try to help people be more physically active, because I think too many people are physically inactive, but yet we're made to feel bad about it, even though actually there's nothing abnormal about it. And I think more physical activity can help us be healthier mentally and physically. And we're not doing a very good job about helping each other, encouraging each other in an appropriate way to be active.
Thank you. I'll make you feel good with this. You ready? Because of my situation, I learned how to swim again, because walking is just too difficult for me. I swim 2 miles a day, 6 days a week. And I've done that for the past 12 years. I have over 7,603 miles logged in my calendar. So I am fervently in your camp. Thank you very much, Dr. Daniel Lieberman, for being with us today. Remember, everybody, www, what a wonderful world. Wow, words of wonder, words of wisdom that you heard today. Smile, seeing miracles in life every day, or as my 8-year-old niece would say, seeing miracles in everyday life. It doesn't so much hurt to walk without shoes. Walking without shoes is going to hurt you. It's going to enliven you. And that's what we deal with. We deal with life, living inspirationally for eternity. F you, everybody. F you, capital N, capital N. Have fun, because then you can bring joy into your life by creating the kind of world you all want to live in, causing rethinking, as Dr. Lieberman has pointed out, causing rethinking, enabling all to excel and learn to say thank you, to harmonize and network kindness 3 times a day, consciously and conscientiously. Our blessing to you. Go forth, live the blessing, spread the seeds of joy, happiness, peace, and love. Go mad. Go make a difference.